This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Last night in Shul, we touched on a very important and fundamental medrash, after which there were a number of comments and questions. And I want to learn that medrash again and take it somewhat further. The medrash at the end of this parsha has a long section, or a relatively long section, dealing with the principle of shalom. Shalom translated as peace. And as with many terms in the Torah, many principles, once they become translated, unless we have a deep understanding of the principle, we tend to relate to the principle as we would to the English equivalent. And this is a typical example, how the word shalom, which is a limitless concept, a limitless principle, we tend to relate to in terms of the word peace. And peace is such an inadequate translation, because not only does peace, the word peace, the term, the concept peace, not tell all of the story of shalom, it actually tells the wrong story of shalom. Shalom plays a part in three areas in the Torah. Firstly, shalom means peace, whatever that word means, and we'll try and achieve a clearer understanding. Secondly, shalom is a greeting. When we greet somebody, we use the word shalom. And thirdly, shalom is the name of the Ribbono Shalom. But the Ribbono Shalom himself considers that as a name of his. And it is for that reason that one isn't permitted to greet a person in the bathroom, because one isn't permitted to say Hashem's name in the bathroom. So one cannot say Shalom Aleichem, one cannot say Shalom. You can say hello in English, but you cannot say Shalom. And that in itself creates a certain halachic difficulty, which we're going to look at this evening, and that is, if there is such kedusha to the word Shalom, if it is Hashem's name to such a degree that it cannot be used in the bathroom, how is it that we allow it to be used in everyday greeting? Surely we should choose some other word to use Hashem's name in everyday greeting. The medrash we learnt last night, and we'll go further in the medrash today, this evening, says the following: Re'ei kamahu koichoi shel shalom. Come and see the extent of the power of this concept, of this principle, shalom. Borei, come and look. If a person has somebody he hates, somebody he resents, somebody he's had an argument with, he goes and he thinks and he searches and he finds ways of getting at him. When he's run out of things to do to him, what does he do? He goes and finds a more powerful person than himself, and he flatters this person and builds up a relationship with this person in order that he can employ the agency of this more powerful person to undermine his enemy. But Hashem Yisborach is not like that. All the idolaters anger him, and they sleep. Go to sleep. They anger him the whole day serving idolatry. At night they go to sleep. What happens when they sleep? All the souls, even the idol worshippers, go up to Hashem at night. That's what happens when one sleeps. And what does Hashem do in the morning? He returns each person's neshama to him. So the human being, that not only does he use all of his own powers to harm his enemies, he employs the powers of others. Hashem Yisborach, who doesn't have to employ the powers of others, because he holds the neshama's right in his hand, he can just withhold them and not give them back, and that will be the end of the rosha. Hashem doesn't do that, even though the person undermines Hashem, even though the person is an idol worshipper, Hashem gives the neshama back. That's keichoy shel sholem. That's the extent of the power of sholem. And in this medrash we have the definition of what sholem means. See what the medrash calls this person, a soneh. He's an enemy. He does not refer to him as a friend. Even the Evei Kechovim, the idol worshippers whose soul Hashem returns to them every morning, they are not referred to as Hashem's best friends. They are referred to as Sonim, they are Hashem's enemies. But the principle of Sholem is expressed by the way you treat your enemies, not by the way you treat your friends. To be at peace with your friends, that's not called Sholem. That, you don't need the midah of Sholem for that. That's simple, that's natural. To be at peace with your enemies, well, that you need Sholem. To be able to relate with your enemies, that's the midah of Sholem. It's a different concept altogether. And we need to understand also that relating peacefully to your enemies doesn't mean that you turn them into friends. Relating peacefully to your enemies doesn't mean that you pretend they've done nothing wrong. Relating peacefully to your enemies doesn't mean that you don't exact justice. Is there any suggestion that the Ribbono Shel Olam is not going to punish the idol worshippers? Of course he'll punish the idol worshippers. Is there any suggestion that if somebody has done you wrong, that you're not permitted to go to Beis Din and to exact your compensation? Of course you're allowed to do that. Sholem is something else. Sholem is not an abandonment of justice. Sholem is not a denial of enmity. Sholem is a recognition of enmity. And it's an acceptance of justice. Sholem is the understanding, however, that enmity and justice does not erase the value in the other human being. It doesn't mean because he's an enemy he has no value. It doesn't mean because he's got done wrong and he needs to be punished that he doesn't have value. If we're going to see the value of the human being as infinite, then nothing can erase or detract from the value of the human being. That's what sholem is. I explained last night that the principle in the Medrash is that the Ribbono Shel Olam does not use his goodness as a tool of expediency and manipulation. He does not hold it as a carrot to say, if you're good, I'll be good to you. If you're bad, I won't be good to you. If you behave yourselves, I'll give you your neshama back. If you don't behave yourselves, I won't give you your neshama back. He doesn't do that. His goodness and our entrusting ourselves to him is something which the Ribbono Shel Olam treats as a value all on its own. Not so the human being. When the human being does good, it's always with a cheshbon. Somewhere or other, there's a calculation. Some kind of reason, some kind of purpose. And I pointed out last night that the Medrash talks about the sholem, the way God operates and the way man operates, without indicating that there is a distinction between men and men, that there may be some people who aren't like that. Maybe some people do chesed without a calculation. The Medrash doesn't seem to allow for that possibility. Look what it says. Bore, come and look. Come and look. Boss of Adam. What does a human being do when he has an enemy? It doesn't say what do most human beings do. What do some human beings do? What do non-Jewish human beings do? It says, boss of Adam. This is the way of humanity. That we use our goodness as a method of punishment and reward. We use our goodness as a tool of manipulation. That's human. And therefore the psychologists and the sociologists will explain every act of kindness in terms of politics. They will work out what makes a parent good to a child. What is it that drives him to be good to a child? What is it that drives somebody to do an act of charity, that drives a person to do an act of heroism, that drives a person to do an act of mesiras nefesh? They'll figure out what it is. It's because when he was a child, he felt inadequate and his parents treated him badly, and he has to prove himself to himself, and he has to prove himself to the world, and that's why he's doing it. There will always be a cheshbon to explain why he's doing it. And that's so beautiful, because that enables you to undermine the chesed of anybody. That means if anybody does a chesed, you can always prove to yourself that it's not really a chesed. He's doing it for himself. If anybody does something magnificent, if anybody does something that costly to himself, you can always figure out that he's really done it, he's got some other cheshbon, there's some reason why he's done it. It's not really, he's not doing it for its own sake. That's the secular way of viewing people. That people are selfish animals, they're just animals a little bit more sophisticated than other animals, and anything they do is for their own survival. That's the secular way of looking at man, and therefore that's the secular way of looking at chesed, and that's the secular way of looking at sholem, at peace. Not so the Ribbono Shel Olam. When Hashem does chesed, that's something else. Surely Hashem punishes. Surely Hashem rewards. That's a different parasha. That's Hashem in terms of his mishpat. That's Hashem in terms of his justice. As we'll say over and over again during the Aseres Yemei Tshuva and on Yom Kippur, Avinu Malkeinu, Hashem has a dual role as a father and as a king. As a father, the chesed is unconditional. As a king, it's justice. And the two go hand in hand together. But there is such a thing as Hashem continuing to do good every moment, even while the sinner is sinning. Hashem gives him life. Hashem gives him intelligence. Hashem gives him health. Hashem helps him along the way while he's sinning. At the very moment that the idol worshipper is bowing down prostrated to his idol, Hashem is breathing life into him. Every minute, every second, Hashem is breathing life into him, enabling him to carry on, benefiting from the most precious gift that man has, the gift of another moment of life. And I explained last night, does that mean that a human being cannot rise above his nature? Is it impossible? Is it possible, Adam? Does that mean that man will always be selfish? That man is incapable of doing a chesed for its own sake? And I explained, no, a man is capable of being godly. But to understand that, one has to project oneself far beyond any form of secular thinking. And that's why psychology will never be able to understand man. And that is why science of any form, all the human sciences with all their sophistication, will never be able to understand man. Because they need, it's unscientific to acknowledge godliness as part of the human being. That there's no basis for it. You can't prove it. And it's built into the Bria like that. It's built into the creation. If we could prove it, there would be no free will. So it's not possible to prove, and it won't be possible to prove. So long as it's not possible to prove, it cannot be used in science. So they're taking out from the human makeup the most important element in understanding the human being. The possibility of him transcending his humanity and becoming godly. The fact that we are instructed and therefore have the capability of the holachto bidrochov. You can go in God's ways, you can be godly, it's possible for you to be godly, it's possible for you to behave not like a human being, to behave like a Ribbono Shel Olam. That is possible. That's what a human being is. That's the greatness of the human being. That's the extent of the human being. An extent which is beyond the vision of any scientist. An extent which is beyond the vision of any social scientist. So when the Medrash says, Bosov Adam, that is what a human being does and that's how a human being copes, we need to understand that what the Medrash is saying is that is natural, that is what nature is, that's how Hashem created the nature of a human being. And that's how scientists will always understand human actions. Every action will be reduced to an act of self-indulgence of some form or another. It's only the Ribbono Shel Olam and those human beings who are acting in a godly fashion that are able to rise above that and to do a goodness for its own sake. I was asked after last night by Dr. Gordon that there can be non-Jews who do the most amazing acts of chesed with no apparent reason or self-interest. Religious non-Jews, others. How can one explain then the statement of the Tanakh that chesed l'umin chatos, that not only is the kindness of the other nations not an act of kindness, but it's chatos, there's sin involved in it. So this Medrash actually explains it. This Medrash is saying, because that's human nature. When we do a kindness, we do a kindness because of either out of reward for something good or in anticipation of something good. But the moment we have an enemy, we cease doing kindnesses to our enemy. That shows, if we don't do kindness to our enemy, that shows that our kindness is not unconditional, that our kindness is not a value within itself, that our kindness is conditional to what we have gotten from others or what we anticipate being able to get from others. That's chatos, that's sin. We're manipulating, we're not doing chatos, that's not chesed. And chesed lumin chatos. And the question was, but there are individual non-Jews who've done acts of kindness. My answer to that was, that as far as I can think, the Jewish people are the only group, national group or religious group, that have no desire for conquest, that have no desire to be bigger than we are, that have no desire to missionarize, that don't see it as our function and our purpose to convince and to persuade other people that ours is the right way, we have no interest in that. On the contrary, we recognize that at least until the Mashiach comes, the MS is always in the smallest groups. You don't find mass movements for truth. You don't find mass movements for MS. You never have, and you certainly don't at the moment. Once a movement is a mass movement, and part of its function is to increase its ranks, then it's questionable whether what is involved is in fact MS. We've often said how most of the Bria are not the higher animals. Most of the Bria are the insects. They are the majority. So if we're going to extend democracy to the full animal world, which I think is just a matter of time, we've said once before, that if you accept the principle of evolution and you accept the principle of democracy, then once every human being has got the vote, the next thing the liberals will start pushing for is that every animal should have the vote too. Certainly apes, why not? That's the next obvious thing. Why not? Just because you're a more sophisticated animal, you've just developed a little bit further, so you must have the vote and not you. And there's some animals that are cleverer than some human beings, so they'll take a stupid human being, a human being who's backward, who's mentally retarded, and they'll say, look, he's got the vote and he's not capable of grasping things as sophisticatedly as this chimpanzee in the Pretoria Zoo. Is that right? That the chimpanzee shouldn't have the vote and this person should? How are we going to answer that? How are we actually going to say, but there's a difference? Because the whole tendency of liberalism is to demote humanity to its lowest common denominator. And don't think we found the lowest common denominator yet. We're still in the process of going down. So the ultimate is going to be majority of animals. That means the insects will have the decision as to how the world should operate. They're in the majority. And the majority of when you go a little bit beyond that, you say, good, okay, the majority is not human beings. The majority are animals. And among human beings, the majority are not intelligent and noble. The majority are primitive and unintelligent. And among the intelligent, the majority are not involved in MS. The majority are involved in Sheker. And in those of who are involved in MS, the majority are not Jews. And of the Jews, the majority are not Frum Jews and B'nai Torah. And so it goes on and on and on. As one gets closer to the MS, the group gets smaller and smaller until one comes to the essence of Emes, which is the Achdus Hashem. There's only one there, and that's the Ribono Shel Olam. So it's a narrowing circle until one comes to the center point. All other groups feel that it is a failure if their ranks aren't swelled. Once you are motivated by a need to swell your ranks and to increase your numbers, then in every act of chesed there is a degree of manipulation. Maybe by being kind to him, he'll understand what wonderful people we are, and as a result of that, maybe one day he'll become material for conversion. Maybe one day we'll be able to persuade him to our way of thinking. Maybe one day his group of people, and so on and so forth. And that's why it doesn't say that the chesed of individual non-Jews is a sin. It says chesed l'umim, the chesed of nations, because the non-Jewish world operates in groups, it operates with movements, it operates with nations, it operates in large bodies of people, each desiring to swell its ranks. And when one has that function, when the swelling of ranks becomes important, chesed for its own sake is not really possible. Then there's taka always a cheshbon. But as far as the Ribono Shel Olam is concerned, there's no way he's going to swell his ranks, and he does the chesed for its own good, even to those who are machisim, so even for those who anger him. At the very moment they anger him, he's in the process of doing chesed to them, of doing kindness to them. So Shalom, as we see, is not the absence of conflict. That's for sure. Shalom is not papering over conflict. Shalom is the ability to continue recognizing the goodness in people, even during conflict. To continue being mechabed people, to continue honoring people, to continue respecting people, to continue doing good to people, even at the heights of conflict, even at the heights of enmity. Because one recognizes that in that human being, there is something infinite. In that human being there is something holy, and there is something of sanctity. The second medrash goes a little further and says, "Bosav Adam." Another difference. In Yase lechaveru ro eno zozo milibe lo ilam. If one does harm to a person, it's always there. You never get over it. If you really are damaged by another person, if you really are harmed, it's always there. That it sits at the back of your mind. Aval HaKadosh Baruch Hu Eino Kein, but Hashem is not that way. Elo Hayu Yisrael B'Mitzrayim V'Hayu HaMitzrim M'Shadim Oiso. The Jewish people used to live in Mitzrayim and the Egyptians enslaved them. Betit uvilveinim, with mortar and with bricks. Le'achar kol haroish osu l'Yisrael. After all the evil they did to Israel, after all the suffering they caused, throwing the children into the river, after all that, chas hakosu v'aleihim v'omah. The Torah has mercy, has sympathy with the Mitzrim and says, lo yitatayv mitzri kigeir ha'yisu v'atzu. You're not permitted to despise an Egyptian, because after all you lived there. Once again we see here the need to be able to see the good with the bad, to be able to say, yes, they were terrible and they have to be punished, they caused us suffering, they caused us misery, they killed us and they murdered us, and they will have to pay for that. But on the other hand, I lived there, I had refuge while I was there, I benefited from that, and the two don't cancel out. And that's really what we're talking about. But when we're talking about human beings, we're not dealing with balance sheets. You can't let credits and debits cancel each other out. The credits mount up and the debits mount up, and one has to bring justice to bear on the debits, and one has to recognize the credits. And it doesn't matter if there are 1,000,000 debits and only 1 credit. The 1,000,000 debits will be paid for, but the credit is always there, and the credit has to be recognized too. No matter how bad the Mitzrim were, no matter how bad the Egyptians were, there's something there of goodness. And it has to be recognized. And that's why, although for 3 generations they're not allowed to join Klal Yisrael, that's the punishment. For 3 generations they can't. There's mishpat. We've got to know that we don't approve, we don't condone. But the 4th generation they can. And even while we're punishing them, there has to be a recognition of the goodness within them. And once again we see that on the one hand this is the difference between Bosa V'Dov and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is the mankind on one hand, God on the other hand. Yet this is God instructing the Bnei Yisrael. You are not permitted to hate the Egyptians. Not just me, Hashem Yisbarach, that won't hate the Egyptians. You, man, you are a human being. And even though it is natural for man to hate and to always remember one who caused him danger, you can overcome that and you can become godly. You can be the halachta bidrochov. You can fulfill the principle of going in God's ways, and you're instructed to do so. You're not permitted to hate the Egyptians. Another example of how Sholem enables us to overcome our resentments, to deal not with a resentment and an anger, but to be able to deal rationally with an injustice, and while one's dealing with it at exactly the same time, to appreciate the value of that human being. Just as a parent deals with a child. A child has to be punished, a child has to be chastised. That doesn't mean that even at the moment the parent is doing that there isn't an enormous amount of love that the parent feels for that child. Then the Midrash goes further. And here we see the extent that the Ribbono Shel Olam values Sholem. It goes so far that there are several cases where Hashem Yisborach is willing to compromise halacha for the sake of Sholem. Now one has to be very careful with that, because if one takes that principle too far, then you can have all sorts of things. You'll have a machlokes in the Beis HaMedrash, you'll have a machlokes in the shul. One group says we should daven on Shabbos, and why we should have Shabbos on the seventh day, and one group says we should have Shabbos on Sunday, and we find a compromise that we'll have Shabbos on Wednesday to make peace. Anything's allowed for peace. It isn't that anything's allowed for peace at all. But on the other hand, we see that the Ribbono Shel Olam makes some amazing concessions for the sake of Sholem. What are those concessions? There are 3 of them. This Medrash brings 2, and we'll look at a 3rd one. Amar Rabbi Akiva. Now you'll see how far Sholem goes. Sh'omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for Hashem says, B'shor she'odom mekaneh li'ishtoi, when a person is jealous of his wife and he's afraid that she's been involved with somebody suspicious, Hashem HaKadosh hanichtov b'kedusho yimoch al ha'mayim, the Ribbono Shel Olam allows his holy name that has been written with kedusho to be erased in water. You know how careful we are about Chas V'Sholem erasing Hashem's name. So we never write Hashem's name. We always write an abbreviation. And even the abbreviations we're careful about. And we put things in Shemus. So careful. And all the shilas and tshuvas that there are about if Hashem's name is written on a computer disk, can it be reused? If Hashem's name is written on a tape recording, can it be reused? So much care and effort we put into making sure that Chas V'Sholem, Hashem's name shouldn't be erased. But the Torah itself instructs that a parsha of Torah has to be written on a piece of parchment and put in water, and it gets erased in the water, and in that parsha of Chumash there is Hashem's name. And that's in order to establish peace between Adam v'Ishta, between a man and his wife. Hashem, so to say, says, I'm willing to allow the erasing of my name for the sake of Shalom. It's one case. Omar Eish Lokish, Godul hu ha-Shalom, Shomar ha-Kosuv Dvorim shel Badai, Liten Shalom ben Yosef le'echov. That the Torah says, not talks nonsense, in order to that there should be peace between Sholem and between Yosef and his brothers. B'shol shemes avien, when their father died, when Yaakov died, hoyu misyarim shelo yinkoim lohim. The brothers became afraid that as long as Yaakov was alive, Yosef never took it out of the brothers. After he had that initial confrontation with them, he then settled down and there was nothing further than that. That was as long as Yaakov was alive, because Yosef knew, and the brothers knew that Yosef knew that Yaakov wanted Sholem. But now that Yaakov is dead, the brothers were terrified that Yosef would demand justice for what they had done to him. And so they said to Yosef, Ma Omrulo, what did they say to him? Avicho tzivo lifnei Moshe lemo, kei tomru leYosef. Your father instructed before his death, saying, say you should tell Yosef. And we don't find any such reference that Yaakov said anything of the sort. But the brothers, and it's brought in the Torah, it's recorded in the Torah, tell a lie. It's not true, Yaakov never said such a thing. So not only do the brothers tell a lie, but the lie is reported in the words of the Torah, so that there should be peace between the brothers and Yaakov, between the brothers and Yosef. So those are two cases. Hashem's name is erased in the case of a Soto, and the brothers tell a lie, and the Torah records the lie for the sake of Shom. Third case is the Gemara in Brochus, the Samach Gimel. Shonu Rabbi Seinu, Hiskinu sheyehe Odom shoel eshlem chaveiro b'shem. The Rabbonin were mesakin, they legislated that a person should use God's name when greeting another person. When Boaz came from Beis Lechem and he saw his harvesters in the wheel, his employees, he said Hashem Imochem. Not only didn't he say Shalom, he used God's name. He said Hashem Imochem, and he didn't say Hashem. He said it proper. He used God's name proper. We, as far as we go, we'll say Shalom. That's all we'll say. But to actually use God's name, we don't even do it. But the Iker Takona, the main principle that the Chachomim legislated, was that not only can the term Sholem be used, but that you can say Hashem Imoch, may Hashem be with you. And in fact, the term goodbye comes from that. It really, originally what it was God be with you. So the Goyim also have that concept of using Hashem's name in the act of greeting. But that was a takona, that was actually a chazal, not that you may use it, but that you must use it. So although we're so careful of not taking Hashem's name in vain, and then whenever we don't have to use Hashem's name, we don't. And we take every care to use Hashem rather than to say the name proper. And even the word Sholem we use with care, and we don't use in all places and at all times. Yet when we're greeting, we're allowed to use it. So these are three concessions that Hashem has made for Sholem. The first is Sholem ben Ish l'Ishto, to have peace between husband and wife. Hashem is willing to have his name erased. The brothers, in order to have peace with Yosef, are willing to tell a lie, major halachic concession. And the third one is that we're allowed to use Hashem's name, and in fact instructed to use Hashem's name when we greet one another. What's important about those three cases are they're not just halachic compromises, they're halachic compromises in specific cases. The cases, the situation, the compromises, the nature of this compromise, and each one is referring to Hashem's rights over his own name, so to say. It's not general halacha which is compromised. You can't compromise Hilchos Shabbos for the sake of Sholem. You can't compromise Kashrus for the sake of Sholem. There's a specific halacha which is being compromised. That is Hashem's demands for the way we use his name. So in the case of the Soto, it's Hashem's name which is being erased. Hashem says, I'm Balabos on my name, and in this case I will allow you to erase my name. The first case. The second case is the question of Sheker and Emes. Chos Moshe HaKadosh Baruch Hu Emes. Truth is Hashem's stamp. He uses that. That's the thing with which he stamps. His signet ring is emes, is truth. Hashem says, I'm allowing my signature to be forged for the sake of Sholem. It's my signature. Emes is mine. I'm allowing it to be forged for the sake of Sholem. And the third case of greeting one another, once again, Hashem is saying, I'm allowing my name to be used in order for there to be Sholem. So all three cases are cases where Hashem is allowing a misuse of his own name in order to achieve Sholem. Why? What is the mechanism of rising to Hashem's level and doing goodness for the sake of goodness, even to an enemy, even to somebody that one hates? The mechanism is the recognition of godliness in the other human being. That's what it is. If we see other human beings merely as objects of our own manipulation, there to serve us, even as equals, then there's no way we can really find it within ourselves to feed goodness and kindness into people who are causing us harm. But if we're able to recognize deep inside them some spark of godliness itself, then it enables us to relate to them in some way with that recognition. To relate to that part of them, at least, with that recognition. And that's really what a greeting is. What does it mean when you walk up to somebody and you say, Hashem Imoch, Hashem is with you? Normally we take it as a blessing. May Hashem be with you. But there's another meaning to it as well. It's a statement of fact. Hashem Imoch, Hashem is with you. You contain part of Hashem. Hashem is caring for you. You're made in the image of Hashem. You have the ability to rise and to emulate the Ribbono Shel Olam. In you I see something of Hashem. That's really what the greeting means. What do we mean when we greet people? What is the purpose of greeting people? It's to be mechabed them. It's to honor them. It's to make them feel good. And merely recognizing them is already making them feel good. Merely smiling at them and saying Shalom Aleichem already makes somebody feel good. But when you say to somebody, in you I perceive aspects of godliness, in you I perceive something of the Ribbono Shel Olam himself, imagine what that does, how that makes a person feel. That's not just a question of making a person feel a little better, that's making a person feel like $1 million, that's making that person feel like something far beyond he sees himself as. We spoke in a series of shirim some weeks ago about the concept of godliness finding itself when we trace variety to one common source, or in one common source we find infinite variety. That infinity itself there is no godliness. In oneness itself there is no godliness. But to link oneness with infinity and see that it's the same, that the one feeds the other, that's where we really find godliness. And so it is in human relations. To find godliness within ourselves is very difficult, very hard. And as we said, the psychologists and sociologists will explain everything we do in a way which denies any possibility of any godliness. Everything is based on some animal drive, on some very basic and primitive motivation. It's not very easy for us, not very difficult for us to be convinced when we read secular material that we are in fact, that there is nothing godly about us at all. To find godliness in other people, that's certainly difficult. But what's important is to be able to find a link between ourselves and other people. If we can relate to another person and feel an identity, then we're acknowledging that there's something of a common root in both of us. And what kind of a common root? A biological common root? No, we're dealing with something much deeper than that. Animals don't recognize that common biological root. Once the little babies in the animal world grow up just a little bit, they don't recognize their families anymore. They don't relate to their families anymore, in nearly all cases. When we're talking about being able to recognize a commonality with another human being, what we're talking about is recognizing a common spiritual source. That I see something in you that I see in myself too. And no matter how bad you are, no matter what you've done, no matter how evil you are, something there is in you that makes you potentially so great. Something in you that makes me feel that potential greatness. What is it? There we're recognizing godliness. And that's what Sholem is. Sholem is the Ribbono Shel Olam's name, and the other meanings of Sholem emanate from that. Sholem means the Ribbono Shel Olam. But it means the Ribbono Shel Olam as manifest through human relations. That's what it is. There are different ways you experience the Ribbono Shel Olam. If you go into the Beis HaMikdash on Yom Kippur, you feel the presence of the Shechinah. If you go to the Beis HaMikdash on the Sholosh Regolim and you've got the whole of Klal Yisrael all in the Beis HaMikdash, you'll feel the Shechinah. You're sitting and you're learning Torah, you feel the Shechinah. You're davening and saying Kriya Shema, you feel the Shechinah. There are different ways that if one's on the level, in theory at least, one's able to feel Hashem's presence. Sholem is one particular manifestation of Hashem's presence. That's when two human beings are able to recognize within each other a common godliness. That feeling of oneness from the variety, we're different human beings. We think differently, we live differently, we believe different things. We have different tastes, we have different ideas. And yet there's something in each other that we can both relate to and respect and admire. And that we feel a commonality about. That's what we call Sholem. And again, it's not the Sholem that one feels from uniformity. It's not the abolishing of any boundaries and any distinctions between people. That doesn't create Sholem. To feel at one with somebody with whom one is at one, that's not Sholem. To feel Sholem with a friend, that's not Sholem. None of these Midrashim that we've had talk about Sholem with a friend. That's not Sholem, that's friendship. That's Ahavo, that's Achvo, that's love, brotherhood, Reus, companionship, but that's not Sholem. Sholem is when there's conflict. And in the midst of that conflict, you're able to feel an identity, you're able to feel there's something in that person. There's something admirable in that person. There's something worth working on in that person. There's a potential for greatness in that person. There's godliness in that person. To walk up to another human being, no matter who he is, and say, Shalom. That doesn't mean peace. That means Ribbono Shel Olam. That's what one's saying. To walk up to another human being, and to say, Shalom. In you I see God. What a greeting. How one relates differently to such a person afterwards. How he behaves afterwards. After you've been called God, you can't behave in certain ways. That imposes a responsibility. And if we go around referring to one another that way, saying Sholem to one another, with that kind of meaning, with that kind of understanding, in you I see something of the Ribbono Shel Olam, in you I perceive godliness. Despite the fact that we're different. Despite the fact that we have different backgrounds, and maybe even despite the fact that we're enemies, and I want you to know tomorrow I'm going to meet you in Beis Din. The fact that I see God in you doesn't mean that we're not going to fight this out. The fact that I see God in you does not mean that you're not going to be punished for what you did. But you should know that through all that, I still see God in you. I still say Sholem to you. Because I still see that in you. That's what Sholem means. Sholem is not the absence of conflict. Sholem is not the abolition of boundaries. Sholem is the ability to cross those boundaries and perceive the infinite in the other person, to be able to perceive the Ribbono Shel Olam in the other person. And so we find that these three concessions that the Ribbono Shel Olam makes are not concessions at all. Because what is the Ribbono Shel Olam saying? I'm willing to have my name erased so that there should be Sholem between husband and wife. What's it? The name in writing is a kli, it's a utensil. The peace between husband and wife. That's real Sholem. That's the godliness. That's what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants. So I'm willing to rub out the label in order that the content should be there. I'm willing to tell the lie. The brothers are willing to tell the lie in order that the Sholem should be there. Sholem doesn't mean absence of conflict. Sholem means that there should be, in the midst of all that conflict, there should be a recognition between the brothers and Yosef of who they really are and an admiration of one another. And the Ribbono Shel Olam's willingness to dispense with his hakpodo, with his insistence that we're terribly careful on when we use the name of Hashem and when we don't, that he's allowing us to use it freely when we greet other people, that too is not a compromise. He's allowing us to use his name freely because by using it we're actually creating the very essence of what that word Sholem means. And of course the word Sholem comes from Sholem, the root is Shin Lamed Men, which means complete. It means whole. Where two people, every person is only a part. No human being, if a human being was perfect, he would be the Ribbono Shel Olam. So every human being is imperfect. But when two imperfections come together, and they're able to complement each other in such a way that by their coming together, they're able to perceive something of a greater perfection, something greater than either of them and greater than both of them put together, that's when they're perceiving something of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And so the Sholem, that is peace, the Shalom that is a greeting, the Shalom that is the name of Hashem, are all the same Shalom. It's all the same principle. But the underlying principle is Shalom, Hashem's name. Because Shalom is Hashem, that's the manifestation of Hashem in interpersonal relationships. It's for that reason that we use the term Shalom when we greet another person, that we acknowledge the godliness within him. And when we use the term peace, that too is what we're referring to, that in the midst of our conflicts with other people, we're able to relate to them as being images of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and we're able to create what the Torah says is Shalom. Bo Re'eh, once we have some kind of appreciation, what this is all about, a term that is used so freely, a word that we use in everyday conversation who knows how many hundreds of times, yet a principle so deep, Bo Re'eh Kamahu Koichoi Shel Shalom. Come and see when you really understand the infinite power of what Shalom is.